which I also noticed apparently it puts a little thing up in the corner for that. Okay, everyone, welcome. Benoit, can you mute when you're not talking because there is sound coming from your mic? Thank you. Alrighty. So we have up today, we have the first of some RFCs to go over. The first one is RFC number one. It's in the agenda email. It's the crypto RFC from Theo. And it's gone through final comment, and it's we're in the thumbs up, thumbs down. Okay. Joe?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, good. I don't have to vote. Okay. All right.
Are you abstaining on the record?
Honestly, I don't. I haven't done anything with crypto-related stuff in years, and I think it's better for everybody if I just stay out of any conversation around it unless absolutely needed. Even if it's just wrapping libraries. All right, so, All right, I guess I gotta create a issue. I gotta figure out what I'm supposed to do after merging it. Okay, I'll figure that out later.
I just converted the label to active, if that helps.
Yes, I think that's good for active, but then I remember there's something I'm supposed to do after that. Look, Verizon is telling me they take my money. Okay, the next one is number five, optimization inhibition.
It's good. I like.
Joe? Alrighty. Dun, 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 dun. Number 12, function to remove unneeded space in strings and arrays.
I like.
Joe, okay. I'm over here on the other screen. I can't see thumbs up until I come back. It's all right.
Well, you asked for my thumb not the first time.
Well, that's because you should be able to tell from my look on my face whether I'm looking at you, this screen, or if I'm looking at
If you're looking at me, should I see some sort of a grimace maybe?
No, but you should be able to, there's a reflection in my glasses. Right? See, there you are, right there. Yeah. Oh, wait. Okay, that's kind of creepy, Sylvan, but I don't see you reflected in the glasses when you do that. Okay, all right. Boom, boom, boom. Hey. All right. Congratulations on the folks who just got their first RFCs. Woo!
Yay.
Wow, there's a light over my head. It's great. That freaked me out. There doesn't seem to be a switch for it, though. That's really weird. Okay. Up next, we have one outstanding pull request. It's number 104. Man, you've just been busy, man. You got two RFCs up. You got a pull request. Crazy. So, yeah, 104.
1,004. Yeah. I think this is really good. The switch to changing the linkage based on whether you're building a library or not is smart. I think everything has been covered. Private linkage and external linkage, it looks good. I don't think anything is going to break. I think it's a total win.
Merge. Yes?
Yep, I just merged.
Damn you. Look, there's like, I get some sort of GitHub points or something like for that or something.
Okay.
And then,
then I won't do it because I don't care about the gamification.
And then you can turn them in for like prize. I'm trying to get the giant teddy bear. So
it's going to take a lot of merges.
It's going to take a lot of merges.
This is the equivalent of skee ball here.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
You need a bot that generates PRs and merges them.
Oh my God, that's brilliant. That is.
I found a 4 foot tall teddy bear on the street years ago and gave it to my kids. I didn't even have to skee ball.
Did you check if there was cocaine in it first?
I should have. I'm going to go check now. I'll be right back.
I had a teddy bear that was about that size when I was a kid, but until I actually stop and think about it for a moment, I remember it was more like a 6 to 8 foot tall bear.
But it was definitely full of cocaine.
Well, I did get it from my father. So
there we go. QED.
All right. Issue 993.
This is a tough one. This is a properly tough one. Because right. So Benoit's absolutely right that generating the undefined values is not good. But it's even worse than that, which I hope my comment made clear, but I'm not sure if it did. Which is, we only get undefined values if we're using a constant, and LLVM can detect that constant is out of bounds for FP to SI or FP to UI, the one. Otherwise, even with something that's out of bounds, it's going to go ahead and generate the assembly instruction. The assembly instructions themselves don't necessarily return something that you might expect. I wrote up a little test program for myself that gets time nanos and multiplies it by something not large enough to convince LVM that it will always be out of bounds, but big enough that it's always out of bounds, and converts it. And rather than getting a consistent high bit set, you get random data from it. And when I looked at the assembly that was generated, I cannot convince myself one way or another why that's happening. So that's exciting. The other side of it is... go for it.
I think the problem is that LLVM says that the value for the instructions are undefined. It's undefined if it's a constant or not.
So
I'm not sure if I'm really clear.
Right. No, you're right. But the issue.
If you look at the
at the language reference. Yeah, totally. So yes, but the only reason that the only way that LLVM will convert that to an LLVMIR undefined value is that if it can be certain that it's out of range. Otherwise, it goes ahead and generates the assembly instruction. But the assembly instruction itself isn't all that helpful in terms of error detection. There is, if you look at the documentation on CVTTSD2SI, you'll see that what it'll do is it'll set a floating point invalid exception and return the indefinite integer value, right, which is high bit set. Let me generate some assembly real quick here. In fact, let me see if I have it lying around, because maybe that'll be clearer. I do have it lying around, so that's good. So this is some code that calls time nanos, multiplies it by something, can't remember what, converts it to an integer, and prints both the floating point number and the integer out. I'll paste it into the chat. This is the resulting assembly. So the interesting bit here is the call to VCVTTSD2SI, I would think would always be returning the indefinite integer in RSI. However, when I run that code, oh, darn, I don't have the binary built. Let me see if I can find this thing in my undo buffer. I foolishly didn't keep it. Ah, yeah, there it is. Yay for undo. So it doesn't generate undef in the IR, and the hex values that it prints out are a bit random. So here's a couple runs of it. There. Let me actually give you the code that I'm generating. In fact, let me do this so that it's printing both values. You can see what I'm talking about better. So the floating point value that's generated is printed first, and then the result of making an integer out of that. And here's the program. So that's definitely a number that doesn't fit in a U32, right? We're good with that. And it's definitely the same number each of those runs, but the output not only isn't correct, it's not consistent. And I'm not sure why VCVTTSD2SI isn't doing what the assembly page says it should do, which is return the indefinite integer. So that's exciting. Can anyone see from the assembly what might be happening? Because I can't. Because it's going into RSI. It's jumping to printf, which is welcome to highly optimized assembly. Yeah. Let me try that without optimizations and see what it prints out. It's still random. And when I look at the IR in both optimized and optimized mode, there's no LLVM undef that's being generated. So, for example, the optimized LLVM IR is this. Which is all very sensible.
Maybe LLVM isn't required to produce working assembly working with non-constant values. So even if you don't get undef in your IR, you may not get you may get the problem at runtime.
Excuse me. So that's an excellent guess. Let me quick try and see if generating a number that is small enough will produce a consistent result. So if instead of multiplying it by something large, I multiply it by something quite small so that I get something in bounds, I get this lovely result, which is absolutely correct. And the conversion works. And the assembly is this, not exactly the same, but awfully close to the same. Let me post it in case someone is better at spotting assembly differences than I am. It's just register assignment, so used RBX instead of before it used RSI, then it popped RCX.
Is there a way to somehow print the binary representation of the original float?
The binary representation of the original, yes, absolutely. There's a way to print the binary representation of the original float.
So we could see if in some way that corresponds to the number we've been, the U32 number we've been looking at.
Oh, you mean in the case where it's big? That's quite
right. Fine. Yeah. So, what I'm wondering is maybe, depending on what the representation is, but I think is architecture specific, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the representation is an architecture. That's IEEE. So that representation is consistent for all IEEE 754s.
Okay.
But still, I'm a do it. I'm a print it. So that's exciting. The binary representation is the first one, and then after conversion to an integer is the second one. And they're completely different. Oh, wait. I used an F64, and that bits is going to be... quite a bit bigger than that. Let me fix that. Let me get the low, the high and the low of this. No, it's still random, even when I print out the high and the low. So yeah. I think this remains needs discussion and needs investigation. I do want to make sure that we don't get into performance problems by doing too much runtime checking of values before we do the conversion. At the same time, the current state where anything out of bounds can produce all kinds of non-useful results doesn't seem great. Anyone else have thoughts? I feel like I'm talking too much.
Well, I mean, if this instruction, the CVTTSD2SI, were doing what it was supposed to be doing, or at least as we expect it to do, then the LLVM language reference would still say this is undefined, correct?
No, so that's a good point. The language reference, when it says that it's undefined if it's out of bounds, what it means is at the LLVM level, when it does optimization, if it sees that it's out of bounds, it will generate an LLVM IR undef. But if it can't see that it's out of bounds, then it's going to turn that SSA form. It's going to actually calculate those values and generate the assembly. And that's what it's doing here. So the key is that we have a test case that shows that when LLVM can tell that it's out of bounds, as Benoit found, it will put undef in there. But here where it can't tell it's out of bounds, it doesn't generate undef. It generates valid IR and what looks like valid assembly, but it's not giving the results that I would expect. And I suspect I'm just not understanding the X64 assembly well enough, to be honest.
So the desired behavior would be, and I guess this is just conceptually, would the desired behavior be to always to never generate an IR of undefined and always convert the IEEE 754 format into a relevant, even if truncated, U32 value? Or what would our goal be here?
So that's a really good question. To my mind, probably the thing that would surprise me least as a programmer is if a really big floating point value resulted in the biggest possible integer value. And so that's saturation. And similarly, a really small one, you would get, you know, int min. But the hardware is not going to like us, right? We'd have to do a lot of logic to get there. And for something like, you know, video codecs, what Pony's doing right now is exactly the desired behavior. So that's annoying.
Well, it's not the desired behavior in the test case that you found, right?
Right. No, it's not. In the test case that Benoit found, or even in the one that this one that I put together, yeah, it's not the desired behavior. Or at least it's a surprising behavior. Let's put it that way. Yeah. But in a video codec, it is exactly what you want, which is you don't want to do any checking. You know things are within a certain bounds, and when they're not, you're absolutely fine with getting random data out of it, as long as it's fast.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, you would expect saturation, and this may be due to my, you know, this may just be my problem, my inexperience, but what I would expect would be to get the same value as if I had converted it to a big enough integer, whatever size that would be, and then truncated down to the least significant bits of the of that big enough integer.
Right, so that you were actually doing modular arithmetic.
Yeah.
That makes even more sense than saturation. It would also be even more logic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't know if that helped us or hurt us.
Yeah, no, actually, that would be... to do that correctly, you'd actually need an arbitrary precision integer library, which, gosh, that's not a good plan. But it is... Yeah. I totally see where you're coming from. Mathematically, you're right. That is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was some like bit magic we could do that got us there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are we doing with this for now?
I will continue to look at it. What do you think, Benoit? You're muted if you're talking. There you are.
I'm not really sure what to do.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. I'm glad you found it, though, because it's important to think about.
I'm going to leave it at needs discussion, and at some point, hopefully, we'll remember it's there and we'll discuss it again.
All right, sounds good.
All righty, next is 996. Which is the interesting segmentation fault in the HTTP one.
Yeah.
It's been logging, apparently. It goes away when not logging. And it certainly looks like it's related to logging.
It does. I can't replicate it. Has anyone been able to replicate it?
This was reported by... The other person who mentioned the removing the logger originally, and right. I was not able to replicate it on OS X. There's another one that he opened where apparently he was able to make it happen very quickly on his particular Linux.
Okay.
So both
also, that one says as a mutability assertion, which means that it may already be fixed. 937. That's the assertion that we fixed previously, remember?
Yes. Okay, so there's that one. This one, though, I mean, so, okay, VirtualBox latest version. All right, I'm going to start by finding out which version. Maybe he's using an older version of Pony or a version from a while ago.
Okay.
That's a good place to start. And let's see. I'm going to call this a bug and needs investigation.
Sounds good.
And unknown difficulty.
Yeah.
Unknown priority. Just needs investigations. Alrighty, and I think we got one more. Number 1,000. Lucky 1,000. And I don't really know how we would replicate this.
I've got a Parallella that's an ARMv7. Oh gosh, right.
Yes.
Never mind. It's his own code.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe it's very much a bug.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I have no idea how we get at it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, just in general, like, I don't know if people, like, expect it to lead off with, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've got to ask him for a minimal test case because there's not much we can do with that one. And I know that's hard on him because he's obviously got something quite complex, but I just don't know how to approach it without one.
Yeah. I wonder if we could insert some asserts at places where actor arrow continuation is assigned to, and be sure that every time we assign to it, we're not assigning.
It's an excellent thought, but it's not the thing. So actor continuation actually isn't used in the Pony runtime at all. It's ignored. And the core problem, actually, if you check out the line above that, it's actor equals FFFFFFFA. So it's trying to dereference a field in unavailable memory. And actually, that context pointer looks invalid as well.
Okay. Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah. But that was a good thought. Yeah, I mean, that is a completely smashed stack because the chance of that being the scheduler is low. It's possible. I guess that's not the high bit. It is possible. It's just not likely. It looks like GDB is right and the stack is just garbage, which also makes it really hard to debug.
John, you're talking to a muted mic.
Damn it. All right. Shut up, Silva. Shut up. Okay. So that's the end of the stuff that we had. Silva and I opened a PR for the RFC stuff that we talked about last week. Can you take a look at that real quick and weigh in with your two cents? It's number 20.
Yep. Sorry. I'm just navigating slightly slowly. Sorry.
Kill, kill. Faster, faster.
Here we go. Phew. Yeah.
Yeah, so the short version is my worry was that points 1 and 3 might be a little bit too broad and open to interpretation.
Okay.
But interested to hear other people's thoughts.
I see what you mean.
On the other hand, I
would kind of like broad right now because I think maybe we've gone a little narrow. But yeah, Yeah, I guess the only thing is that API bugs. I see what you mean about omission. Like omission is maybe going too far. But an API bug, I think, is something that we want to be able to jump on pretty hard. So just as an example, I think a lot of the stuff in string and array. Because those were some of the first types ever written in Pony. A lot of it is just a little out of date and a little, yeah, needs a little help. Like the way readint is written is maybe not the most helpful thing you could have on a string, right?
Yeah. I'm just wondering, my thought was what kind of API bugs are we talking about that wouldn't be covered by, like, principle of least surprise?
Okay. Yeah. You know, maybe you're right, because I was thinking about things like, why do add and append on string take different right-hand sides. Well, that is principle of least surprise, isn't it? Okay.
Like, I'm not trying to clamp down too much here, and I don't want to.
I see what you're saying.
Things through the RFC process that shouldn't be. But I think that maybe we should go with, the most specific set of rules we can think of at the moment. Until we see a case in which the rules aren't cutting it.
Can you hit reload? I did a force push because I'm an evil human being. On that. And look at the new one.
Looking.
So you've omitted omission.
And Andy, the thing that you brought up, I just removed it in general for now and going for the less is more at the moment. Do you want to hit reload?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be upset if this goes through, with API bugs in there. I just wanted to bring it up in case there was something more specific we could say about that.
I already removed it.
No, he's talking about the other one, line 30. You removed one of them. I just reloaded. I swear.
Line 30? No, that's gone. Wait, no. What stupid git? No? Get stupid Sean.
Force push.
I don't know how I did that. I swear to there. That's what I thought everybody was going to be reading.
All right. Yeah, let's go for it. Let's do that.
Yep. And we can add it later if we need to.
Yep.
I swear to God it told me that I had added the thing and then pushed it. Oh, I know what happened. This is the thing where I make a change and then I forget to hit save. And then I get really confused for a while. and then I save again without realizing that I've saved again. And suddenly there were changes there that weren't there. So.
Yeah, someone needs to write a Git extension that looks into the buffer of your text editor and says, do you have changes that you want to save first before you commit them?
It's the school for people who don't commit so good. Right. Okay. What do you want to merge that so I don't look like the crazy person who merges their own stuff, Sylvan?
Yep, sure.
Haha, I win.
Oh, you totally win.
Sean's come unhinged. He's merging his own PRs.
All right, do we have anything for the last 21 minutes before I have to head off to a meeting in 21 minutes?
I have a question about what you guys would like to see happen with some of the work I'm doing and RFCs. So I'm working on generalized back pressure right now, which means code that lets an actor determine that it believes that its queue is loaded, and then other actors, when they send to an actor that believes its queue is loaded, will then be able to be scheduled in a low priority scheduler queue and also will mark their queues as loaded so that pressure propagates through the system. And you can also on think actors that write to output like a TCP connection or standard out can notice that they're buffering output, right? They can't actually write anymore and they can manually activate back pressure. So this is all good. This is great. Generalized back pressure is nice. Should I go put this through an RFC process or not?
No, because it's going to close a number of things that have been reported as bugs, and I think we consider bugs. In terms of if runaway memory usage is a bug, which I think it is, then no, it doesn't have to go through the RFC, because okay. It's not just my one that I opened. There's at least two other open issues where people have noticed this, where it is the same problem. Okay. And we could spend a bit of time explaining the problem to Joe, but it's definitely, there were open issues, and I would call those performance bugs, because first the memory goes crazy, and then the GC is going to go crazy, and then your performance just nosedives.
Yeah, and I guess it doesn't impact the source code.
It should
not. That's what I was going to ask. Is there an API impact? Like, how do you? Okay. Yeah. Well, then I would say even if this weren't a performance bug, if the user developer doesn't notice, other than hey, my program runs faster, then.
Then that's okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, cool. So, but yeah, I'm very excited to see that. And yeah, but even if there was an API impact, I think we could put it in the fast lane due to performance improvements.
Awesome.
Yes, with the whole optimistic merging, we can go back. I think the ones where we really need to be careful are the ones where we end up breaking existing code. And those are the ones that we should talk about for you. Like, no more ones where, yes, it was like where I kept pushing. It was like, we need to have the thing in there so that you have to have auth in order to open a network connection. We should break it now. And well, yes, you should still break it now if we're going to break it, but there should at least be a little bit of conversation. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, very excited to see that stuff land, especially how it, it'll be interesting to see how it ties into TCP.
Yeah, yeah. So, it turns out that the changes on TCP connection that I've done, it's not, the code isn't done yet, but the API to it is done. It turns out you call set back pressure in write final when you can't. And then in pending writes, you might end up calling unset back pressure. And that's it. Which are implemented as FFIs, so it's, you know, pony underscore unset back pressure with an app.
Okay, and so yeah, if I was working on my own IO actor, I would do the same thing. Okay, cool.
Exactly. So that it's not magic in TCP connection. It's runtime magic, but it's not magic in TCP connection.
And, brilliant. And once that goes in, I wanna go ahead and put a thing in it on the TCP one. We can talk about it for notifying somebody who's using like the TCP one to have a callback to say, hey, back pressure is being applied to you. Because it's one thing to have it happen there, and it's good to have the generalized one, but I might want to do something specific in my application when that starts happening.
Right. So that there's a call on the notifier when this happens.
Yeah. Because like in our particular case where we trigger this behavior, you know, we have a thing which is running on a timer, which is firing off data. Ching, 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 ching. Right. And it would be nice to actually just, rather than continuing to have the stuff back up and up and up, to be like, whoa, we're in a back pressure situation. The timer might have fired, but let's not send that batch this time. Let's actually wait to send that batch.
Yeah.
Where the application can then, because otherwise we're still making the problem worse.
Yep. Yeah.
We're just making it less worse. Can I say that? Less worse?
Yeah.
Not as bad. I like less worse though. It sounds
less worse is less
it
worse.
Sounds like a tasty thing that the Germans would eat at a beer hall.
So that brings up an interesting question about timer in general. So Sylvan, you mentioned that sort of if you're an actor that is sending to an overburdened actor, then you yourself would be marked as overburdened, right? Okay, so if that propagates back to a source like timer, what happens there, or what's the plan with that?
Timer itself, so the timer actor, if your timer sends a message from inside the timer's actor to a loaded actor, timers will get deprioritized and will get scheduled off a low priority queue. Which means that you won't get the notification of the ASIO thread, so until later. And so what you'll do is you might end up batching up timers that go out to people once timers runs. Because you know how it can indicate, oh, it fired 9 times since last time. You're muted, Sean, just so you know.
I might actually see a count that's not... Well, I might actually see a real value in count.
Yes. Right now, it fires at such high fidelity that it's pretty much always one. So you need a you need an operating system pause to see something that that wasn't one, I suspect. Right. So it'll get deprioritized, and all of your timers will get slowed down because one of your timers isn't responding. One of the targets of the timer isn't responding very well.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's something that could be good to talk about in some kind of documentation. I'm not sure what, like maybe in the pony patterns, like performance section, we might want to write up something about making sure that you structure your actors in such a way to where if something gets deep, so where you're aware that something could become deprioritized.
Yeah.
And so you don't batch things on, for the example of timers, you wouldn't want to batch some timer that you need to run at a super high fidelity on the same timer's actor as something that could become pretty deprioritized. I mean, it's a good thing for a developer to know about.
Yeah, and the ability to set up multiple timers actors so that you have one that you know isn't going to happen to, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think that should be in the documentation for timers.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, all the too, I don't know.
Sorry, what was that, Jeff?
I just saying it's sort of a general concept, but I guess timers is the only standard library example where you've got several different activities, I guess, focused on the same actor as a source. I mean, with like TCP connection and stuff like that, you've got you've only got one sort of thing going over that connection unless you're multiplexing.
Yeah. Yeah, and similarly with standard in, and you know, it's sure it'll get backed up, but you know, it's standard in, it's fine, it will all just work. Yeah.
Yeah, that all sounds great. I'm excited.
Me too. I really hope it works.
Me three. I really hope it works. Oh, cuz yeah. Anything else?
Not from me.
I have one, but I'm too tired to want to discuss it today. So we can go.
I have one real quick. So we're doing something here where we're trying to use the process library. We're reading from standard out, the standard out of the process that you've launched. We are trying to read binary data.
Uh-huh.
Kind of feels like we should have something kind of like expect available there, and probably also on file readers. Does that make any sense?
Ah, yeah. So file readers, file is currently synchronous because welcome to Unix.
Yeah, wow.
Well, welcome to file systems, really.
Yeah, okay.
But if you had a file actor that was turning a file into an asynchronous source, which would be really easy to write, then you're absolutely right. And yeah, I think you're right. I think process monitor wants expect.
Yeah. Okay. So should I?
Cheers for Sean's idea.
should I just open an issue on that?
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that falls into either principle of least surprise or performance, because it's least surprise because TCP connection has it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's pretty clearly performance too.
See, in under my mind, that was actually one of the things I was thinking of when I said omission, is that one where it's like, oh, look, we actually started exercising this more, and here's a use case that's not covered at all because we didn't do this here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think should I create a general one, or Sylvan, do you think I should open something specifically with your idea of creating like a file or render?
I would say that this is adding expect onto process monitor.
Okay.
We don't have an asynchronous file actor because no one has needed one yet, and the chances are that no one ever will because that isn't really how you deal with files.
Sure. Okay. Fair enough. Okay.
But for process monitor, yeah, an issue saying let's add expect and go ahead and assign yourself and thanks.
I'm not sure how things work right now, but I'll
dang.
That. Nice try.
It was worth a try.
It was worth a try.
Good shot. Okay. That's all I've got.
Cool.
Yeah, the asynchronous file thing is interesting because I don't remember who it was, but somebody says said something about like, oh, well, you say there's no blocking operations in Pony, but synchronous file read. In practice, I don't think it's a big problem.
So when people say that, that's not actually a blocking operation.
Yes.
It may be a very slow operation.
But it's not blocking.
But it's not a blocking operation because you're not saying I am going to block until someone happens to write to this file, and that is unbounded non-determinism. It's actually, I'm going to go read from this file. If it's not there, then I'll get a short read. It's exactly equivalent to doing a non-blocking read on a socket that says, give me whatever data is available. So it's actually a non-blocking operation. And people get confused between the difference between slow and non-blocking, right?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. As long as you're not thinking about your single machine as being a distributed system, like in terms of the electrons going pew pew.
Yeah. Also, if you're using a file for a network file system, exciting things can happen. So yes.
Yeah, I feel like the distinction there, though, Sylvan, and I agree with you. The distinction is like the difference between concurrent and parallel.
It is subtle, to say the least. Yes.
It's if you've done a lot of non-blocking stuff, then it doesn't even occur to you that somebody would consider synchronous to be blocking.
Yeah.
It took me a little bit. When that was first raised, I thought that the person was just being a dick. Honestly.
No.
And then it took me a little bit and I was like, oh, I see where my background is totally different. And I think this word might mean something different to me.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, oh, okay, I understand. And if we had an FAQ thing, I would probably put it in there, but we still don't. And somebody named Sean said they were going to do this whole thing with the website and then something work and other things. And eventually. Yes. Eventually.
All right. Cool. On that note, the call goes out. Is there anything else anyone wants to cover? All right. Awesome.
Hi, everybody.
All right. See y'all next week.
See y'all.
Bye.